of the eminent person. I would request that we have just a minute of a moment of silence for the Ukraine. I just saw Israeli apologies, Russian apologies on our side of Israel. Honorable Damien is not able to make it. Honorable
Kuku and Matek.
Those members are not able to make it to the Senate. But I also think to receive an apology from the Department of Sports and Recreation for the DG. It is always very unfortunate for us as this particular committee. Our meetings fall on a Wednesday. And Wednesday is the candidate day. So the officials were prepared to actually go and attend candidate issues, the ACA president and from FDA. So we don't have any representation from the office of the DG directly, except that we have a PLO and a share coming from the office of the minister. I don't know, but I would just want to confirm from my side, members, I said it's better to continue with the presentation rather than saying no, we want the DG to be late. But I want you to confirm my feeling.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I don't know where the confusion is coming from. Because this morning we had a programming meeting, and then the whip of the committee, Honorable Mamburu, was saying there's no meeting because the department did not issue documents in advance. So when I called now, she says to me, no, she won't make it for the meeting, it will come later. So I don't know really where does the confusion come from. But she has already requested me to submit an apology because she's going to run late for the meeting. But being that as it may, I think this procedure of the meeting, we've got the department there, let them present to us, unlike saying who's not here. I mean, there is a team from the department. And I think we can continue.
Thank you. Is that the feeling of
what
the minister?
Yes.
Regarding the confusion, maybe one would have to sort it out after the meeting, to establish what the actual happening is at regard to them. To my knowledge, there was no confusion. I am the next one, the Chairperson of Education and Recreation, and I would request members to please introduce themselves.
I was near tempted to propose a vote of no confidence, seeing that it's going to be an easy ride. My name is Ndomu Sekaula, a member of the committee. I may also have to request to leave early to go to other committee members.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Herman Groenewald, a member of the committee and representing the Northwest Province.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is the Council. I'm also a member of the committee. Yes, sir.
Thank you. I don't think I'm going to take very long, given the agenda before us. So, Honorable Kaola, I would wish that if you leave straight after the meeting, because it's going to be quite a short meeting for my own husband. I would request the members of the eminent person group to introduce themselves, as well as departmental officials, your position, and everything you have to tell us.
Good morning, Chairperson. I am a recently appointed special advisor on governance and administration to the Minister of Sports. My name is Marie Dirk.
And my name is Gilson, I'm a parliamentary officer.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My name is Maxwell Moss. I'm a member of the eminent person group.
Willie Besson, member of the EPG,
I was the I conducted the research for the pilot study, and I also authored the final report. So I'm intimately involved with that. Just for the record, Dr. Fakeni offers apologies for not being able to attend. So did Mr. Silas Mikaluna, Mr. Condisa Nguyenia, and Professor Maria Keatings. They could unfortunately not make it as a characteristic of the EPC committee. They're all these people, but they really involved in the process.
Okay, thank you for the introduction and the apologies are forging on behalf of the members of the eminent persons group. I want to believe that you'll be able to do such a duty despite that the chairperson of the group
not
here, sure, because you say that you're directly involved in the affected of the report. And I do want to believe that at some stage, if after this meeting, as members of this committee, we need to get each a copy of this report so that you put full understanding of what this content is. Thank you very much.
That's great. The gathering for some of the feedback that I got this morning, because I assumed that the report has been distributed to the papers, which clearly it hasn't. So that will leave a bit of a gap in terms of understanding the presentation. However, as I go along, I will try and embroider around it to fill the gaps as a result of not having the report at your disposal. And I'm willing to field any question, however difficult it may be, to make sure that you're on the same wavelength. I also undertake to make sure that the special presentation on the report, like that has been done with all the other stakeholders, I don't know why we haven't arranged for a special presentation on the report. We have to do that to be able to understand the process that we are involved in. But I'll try my best today to highlight what is necessary.
Okay, thank you. Your presentation is against the background that as members of education administration, we also are responsible for oversight of our sports education and our consent as public representatives, that we, in some areas, in some codes, we do see transformation taking place quite rapidly. But in some of the codes, you can actually observe that the transformation process is actually very slow. Once that code is ready, I know that there is a stigma attached to it, that it is used as some kind of apartheid, which was exclusively for a certain population code. And that leads us to be ended. So that we transform, we see the demographics of the country represented in every course in the sporting arena. Another issue is that we are quite aware of the community. For us to be able to transform sport, we need funding. To lift up those people that have always been left behind, particularly in the rural area. The sporting facility that needs to be developed for people to participate in various codes according to their interests and talents. I do not want to preempt the contents of your presentation. I will give you an opportunity to your presentation, after which I will then allow the members to question and you'll be able to respond after your presentation. I do not want to be leading whoever will be leading the presentation. I will take over to you.
Okay. And what I'll try and do is to give you, I was asked to make a presentation as to the background of how the EPG was established, then to cover briefly the mandate of the EPG as given by the Minister, then the main findings out of the EPG pilot report, and then the recommendations that was made. So I'll cover those four headings. And then, as I say, go around it to be able to capture some of the comments that you've already made, and then after we can deal with any questions that come. So, I've structured it on the basis of a brief introduction on transformation itself to make sure that we're more or less on the same wavelength,
followed by an overview of the EPG Commission and a summary of its mandate, and then to look at the major observations, findings that came out of the pilot study, and then some of the recommendations, the main ones that followed from there. Let me at the onset say that the study was completed in a very short period of time on the instructions of the minister, and it went very well, and I will also elaborate on what the consequences and how the Sportkin codes involved responded to that and where we are now with it, with respect to make sure that happens. Now, on the introductory side, I just want to say that it's generally accepted that processes to change the face of sport over the past 20 years have been largely ineffective when measured against the set goal of making sure that the majority of South Africans have an equitable opportunity to participate, not only participate, but also to excel in sport both on and off the field. Now, why weren't we successful over the past 20 years? The contributing causes were the imbalances, we believe, on the emphasis that has been placed on the arguments for transforming or changing the sports system. There were two reasons. Initially, the emphasis was on moral and justice reasons, because it was the right thing to do. That caused a huge resistance came forth from the establishment part of sport, because they believed that it was a political ploy. So there was huge resistance which took off 10 years of our attempts to transform sport. And it's only lately that the strategic reasons, in other words, that it's absolutely essential that we transform or change the face of sport for our long-term survival in sport, the growth thereof, and its level of competitiveness. As we sit here today, there is general acceptance by even rugby and cricket, and I'll elaborate a little bit more a little bit later on, that they don't challenge the moral reasons for transformation anymore. They accept that it needs to be done. We don't reason or interact with each other on that subject. And the one thing that is now firmly fixed in their minds, they realize that after the pilot study, that the long-term future is threatened because of the reasons that I will elaborate on. So the equilibrium with respect to the approach in terms of the need for transformation is on a far firmer basis than 20 years ago. It's strategically naive for us today to have head in the sand attitude toward the need for both social justice and as well as strategic transformation reasons. Because there's a very simple piece of statistic that came out of the pilot study. And that is that 84% of the under 18-year-old South Africans are Black African, while only 16% is either white, colored, or Indian. Now, if we look at rugby and cricket, we see that their structures on and off the field represents that 16%. It's the smallest component part of our society. So you don't have to be a rocket scientist to realize that your long-term future, the longer you leave that 84% under 18-year-old group unaddressed, your long-term future and sustainability and your competitiveness will be seriously impacted. And that piece of statistic was the one that made the biggest impression on rugby and cricket, and why they came so strongly to the party. We cannot no longer ignore it. Already we have wasted 20 years. That night one reflects on the basis of, were we wrong to say 20 years ago that the targets set, or the quotas in those days, was 50% generic black? Because sporting codes like rugby and cricket took the easy way out, because talents and Indians were in a better position to be able to be taken into the system, whereas Black Africans, becoming from a neglected part of our society, did not have the opportunity, the accessibility. So rugby and cricket focused on Kurds and Indians, rugby on Kurds and cricket on the Asians. Well, the result is that during the pilot study, cricket was transformed with respect to the 50% public. If we started off with a percentage Black African topic, to get to the stage which you mentioned a little bit earlier on, so that our structures represent the demographics of the country, we will be much, much further down the road with Black African representation. Now what happened is, we down the road with colored and Indian representation in those two troublesome countries, and we have to address that. We have to address that. The charter, if I can stand a little bit still with the transformation charter, have the committee, have they got copies of the transformation charter? Okay, I think that we must make a note, because the pilot study and everything flowed is based on the transformation charter. That explains everything, why we are doing what we are doing. So the transformation charter, the pilot study, and the summary of the pilot are absolutely important documents for us to be all on the same wavelength. Now, the charter describes a process linking two strategic areas or dimensions aimed at building from grassroots level upwards an accessible and a sustainable competitive sports system. We talk about competitiveness and accessibility and sustainability in the same way. Absolutely important, because that counters the arguments that comes up with certain sections of our society that we've got to select on merit. We've got to focus on sustainability and also on accessibility to bring about a long-term competitive system. The charter uses a bottom-up approach, ensuring change in key strategic areas. Those areas are, and each one is measurable. Accessibility can be measured, skill and capability development can be measured, demographic profiles in key structures on and off the field of play, and then of course performance levels, because you can't change without bringing a balance in terms of well or how bad we perform. Then very importantly, governance, and then provincial procurement. I may just add that sports contribute over R3 billion to the economy. And you spoke about funding, and we will make sure that we can get our hands on the R3 billion, some of it that goes into the economy, to be able to fund the transformation process, because there are no funds for transformation available. And then of course the other empowerment dimension in our society, which is employment equity. Now this structure is put together in a what we call an if-then logic, and if I can go to the next slide. Okay, hang on, just go back to the first, leave it there. So you can see that the process, the foundation of the process is institutionalized governance. And we are all aware of the governance problems that we've recently had. Athletics, basketball, cricket, also acting, chairperson, president, and they had to sort that one out. So there are massive governance problems within our sporting codes. And chairperson, that is a key criteria. And then that can be resolved. We cannot plan properly in dealing with the problems faced by sport. And I'll highlight a few of them. So that's a critical weakness at this point in time. And this chairperson, to me, had been involved in sport for over 30 years. That next building block in the transfer described in the charter. Okay, next one. That one. No, that one. There is no integrated and aligned sport federation and government sport structures that implement jointly defined programs, projects focused on enhancing access and skills and capability dimension at the community-based school and club level. Chairperson, that together with governance is a massive constraint, because local government, provincial government, national government are all involved with programs and projects that emanate from those structures. Then on top of that, we've got the sports lottery, and we've got the sports trust, everybody funding change and development actions. But no way is this orchestra coordinate to make sure that we have combined and joint projects with goals and objectives that are aligned to each other. I equate that to Oxford and Cambridge rowing down the Thames in those 8-9 rows, and you have 8 highly qualified and developed athletes, and if each one of them row in a different direction, they'll crash into the side. Now that is symptomatic of our sports manager. Until we can resolve that we address and have joint programs and projects that are focused on the key elements to bring about the changes that we want, we are going to mess up another 20 years before we get there. Now, that dimension of the charter, described in the charter, is also miserable. How many joint programs and projects are there? There are very, very few. Each one is doing its own thing. Now, once we've got institutionalized governance processes and the joint programs coordinated and aligned in place, that contributes to the next element of the slide. Thank you. Then we can get structured access to infrastructure, to resources and participation opportunities. If we haven't got water, we compete. It's impossible. Because everybody rows his own boat into a certain direction. And then, superimposed on that, we can have structured skills and capability development on and off the field of play. The skill and capability development off the field of play is far behind what is happening on the field of play. We've got academies. Every sporting code that can afford it has got an academy somewhere. There's no coordination here in the academies. It's like the Tower of Babel that we're trying to build with each element. Sporting clubs like rugby and cricket, I keep on coming back, they don't even talk to each other. Yet they're all active in some way or other at a school level. But they don't talk. So you cause confusion within the education department against the background of the problems that I'll highlight a little bit later on. And now I'm going to the next one. You can see now, once you've got structured access and structured skill and capability developed, now you have tactical change. You put the tactics in place to bring about participation, demographic and competitive profile. You can now change the demography in a structured way. But if you haven't got that bottom competent party in place, how can you change the demographic way in a tactical and intelligent way to bring about demographic change faster and quicker? Now once you've brought about that demographic change, built on that, the next one happens, the last one. Then you get to accessible, sustainable and competitive school system. Accessible because of the demographics, because of the skills and capability development, opportunity to participate, you get a competitive school system. Now, if we, and that's what the charter was crafts in terms of the dimensions, and you can see what I mean by a what-if principle. You can see that arrow on the left, if governance and an integrated program and project system is in place, then you can get structured and capability and access, then you can get meaningful geographic change, and then you can get a sustainable and accessible school system. So that is that schematic summarizes the transformation charter on which this whole pilot survey was based. Okay, so if we get out to the eminent persons group, because based on that charter, the National Sports and Recreation in Darwa in November 2011 recognized that implementation of the charter could be a potential problem, like all our attempts to implement certain things. I mean, to deal with this issue, a resolution was passed that there is a need to monitor and evaluate implementation of the charter if the objectives thereof is to be achieved. This led to the Minister of Sport and Recreation to appoint an independent body, the eminent, so-called eminent persons group, comprising the following people. On the next slide. They can just go through the members here. Dr. Fekeni, Ms. Letwala, Mr. Kanunu, Condition Wenya, Mr. Max Moss, Professor Marion Kim Heath, Dr. Sam Ransami, Dr. Willie Fasson, Mr. Wimpy Dupressi, Mr. Louis von Zierner, Ed Apsa, Professor Timothy Merckx, that Mrs. Olga with a protein diet, and Mrs. Mark Venture, and then Dr. Zoledo Monk. So it's a group of people charged with responsibility to, with respect to the mandate on the next slide. They actually, their mandate was to compile data sheets and analyze transformation audit reports and advise on appropriate targets and make specific recommendations to the minister. It was also their responsibility to monitor and evaluate the implementation of the sports transformation charter, scorecard, provide leadership and direction with regards to the quota and target system, and I'm happy to field questions on quota versus target. Also to provide annual transformation status reports, of which the pilot study in January was the first one. Then to offer long-term strategic direction on transformation support. And then to advise the minister on the design of a short, medium, and long-term transformation strategy within the context of the 2020 vision of the Department of Sport and Recreation. Also, to advise on the design of a transparent tool for monitoring the success or failure of the implementation of the transformation targets, and the first pilot study report was exactly that. It was a very transparent tool to visibly present and discuss the success and failures of the transformation status after 20 years. And then also to advise on incentives and punitive measures, because maybe those were the things that were missing in our attempts over the last 20 years, to be applied to federations and sporting bodies that are not driving transformation to its logical conclusion. You've lifted out rugby, and that is one. Then also the other mandate, part of their mandate, was to interrogate the white paper, quite an important term mandate, part of the mandate, of the Department of Sport, and to pronounce on whether it will address and redress the department's strategic objectives in relation to school sport, to community sport, institutional mechanisms, recreation, funding, and the internationalization of sport. And I think after this report that we are busy with now, that item number 7 will be attacked and addressed in great detail. The overall purpose of the EPG as an independent body is to ensure that the sport ministry has access to adequate information and insight, very importantly insight, to assess transformation status coupled to recommendations that will improve the rate and the effectiveness of transforming the country's sport system at all levels and in all areas as defined in a transformation charter. So you can see that that one is leading to the level of insight on the basis of the five of the pilot study, the detail of the information that's gathered is providing the insight which we never had over 20 years. We were stuck in the last 20 years to say to sport, you must have 50% black people in your team. And that was that. There was no insight as to the reasons that were constraining why we don't get there, how to go about to bring that in an effective way. Now, the PAR study in 2003 is exactly what it was, as I said. It was a pilot targeted at the five codes: athletics, cricket, football, netball, and rugby. Now, the purpose of that pilot study was to determine the transformation status in each one of those codes, to test the data collection system, to test the models according to which we analyze the data that we got, and to determine the strengths and weaknesses within the system that we were piloting. Now, I can quite clearly say that it surpassed all our expectations with respect to this. We learned a lot about improving the quality of the data sets. We learned a lot about the constraints that the codes, although they were elite codes, lots of money, we learned a lot about the inability and the insight that they had in their own businesses so that we could move forward. I might as well just say now that from that we've moved, we're currently involved in auditing those 5 posts again, plus another 11, so that we can have an even greater and more comprehensive overview of transformation status of sport. Now, it's very important to take note that the study really represented the first overall multidimensional, because of the different dimensions of the charter, quantification evaluation of sports transformation status in 20 years. It was the first one in 20 years. So we were flying blindly. We were driving a transformation aircraft. We didn't know how high off the ground we were. We didn't know how fast we were going. We didn't know in which direction we were going. We were just doing things by gut feel. And then trying to communicate in almost unintelligible ways with sporting and trying to touch them to bring about change. And that was a severe constraint in terms of the rate that we wasted 20 years, as I see. The response, I can also add into this stage, after we have interfaced with each one of those codes, made one-on-one presentations to them on the data and the analysis, it was not contested in any way. It was received very positively, and it strained them to commit to a process, which I'll talk a little bit later on, to be able to move forward. The purpose of that study was to establish a draft framework for evaluating the transformation status, not just in the demographic dimension, but in each one of those dimensions which I just illustrated there in that schematic. Performance levels, demographics, access, skill and capability, governance, employment, equity, and financial procurement. So we measure the status in terms of the charter dimensions as they listed there in each one of those codes, and we got an overall score for each one of them. That report, our study was prepared and submitted to the minister, who accepted the report unconditionally, and then it was followed by feedback sessions that was part of the process to the code involved and to various stakeholders who were held under the auspices of the minister and the DG of Sport and Recreation. So we got the 5 codes in one room. We made a presentation on the report to them and gave an opportunity to respond on that basis. Subsequently, that was followed by presentation to the business sector and to a number of other stakeholders. We were also confronted by the Freedom Front and Solidarity on the whole principle and the validity of quotas vis-a-vis targets, etc. Now, subsequently, further interactions with the pilot phase have led to an undertaking by each one of the 5 iterations. That is where we are now. They've undertaken to enter into a memorandum of agreement with the Department of Sport to achieve and to execute the recommendations of the pilot report. They've agreed to enter into that. They've also agreed to make projections in terms of the performances in each one of the charter dimensions annually over the next 5 years. So once that memorandum of agreement is signed, there will be a target for each one of those transformation dimensions annually up until 2018. We will monitor at the end of each year to see how far or how close they are off the agreed target on that basis and then to move forward. Chair, the important thing is that what we managed to establish now through this process is to move away from where politicians shut at sport to say, you must do this, you must do that. We agree the targets on the basis of what we found now and in the next report. We agree what the targets for 2018 in each one of those dimensions, 2016, 2017 and 18. And then we can monitor the changes which are their targets agreed with us with respect to each one of those. You can see it's an effective mechanism to make sure that we don't just have a report and we walk away with it. from the permanent board to the other one, the scorecard or projection will be coming through. Okay. Now, some of the observations that came out of the report, and I know you haven't read the report, which will keep on, and then you'll see these things come through. Now, you see on the basis of that report, cricket has shown that that 50% generic back target that was set in 1994, they reached that target. They reached 100% of that target in all their senior teams as well as under age national teams. So they've achieved that target set in 1994. Now, on the basis of that, the EPG then recommended, seeing that the long-term objective is that all our sports structures must represent the demographics of the country. They recommended that if we want to get there, we can't wait another 2 years at a 50% to the target, but that is moved up to 60%. That was accepted, and apparently the survey is conducted on that basis. We measure against the target of 60% generic rate in terms of the demographic representation figures. That was accepted. Other than the guardians at the gates of change, who vehemently opposed that 60% one, but no other code, no other sporting code that are in the process of status support be prepared, have commented on that. They accepted it. There is no problem with it. So that was a big step forward away from that 50% target. From this study, it was clear that the rate of black African representation in sport has fallen massively behind the rate of improving generic black representation. The target set in 1994 should have been set, as I said initially, on percentage black African representation and not generic black, because colors and Indians have been a little bit more favored. So they're the only population group that have benefited from that 50% target, which is now going to be corrected on that basis. Africanization has now become a major strategic focus for the immediate future and long-term sustainability and competitiveness. Remember that statistics of under 18-year-old South Africans that are 84% black African. Now, if we want to have a competitive system in the longer term, or run the risk of not competing, my gut view is, if we carry on the way we go, we're not going to compete internationally, for example, in rugby in 20 years from now. Because that small 16% human capital base, white, Indian, colour, cannot sustain rugby and cricket in the long term. And that 84% under 18-year-old South African black African group, from a strategic perspective, is our competitive advantage opposite our competition overseas and internationally. That is where the focus must be. So the longer we allow an uncontrolled private school environment and a Model C school environment to control and do what they like within the school sport environment, the rest of the school sports structure is going to just get weaker and weaker annually. And I'll come back to that also a little bit later on. Just an interesting statistic today also is that the 100% progress for all teams achieved by Women's Rugby is way beyond. You see, they are sitting at 78% of that generic black target. And they've only achieved 50% of the generic black dog. Remember, cricket achieved 50%, 100% of the black African and 100% of the generic black. Rugby is way beyond, and it touches into that, as into the remark that you've got initially. Now, there's a very specific reason, because out of the studies that I'm conducting now, we've never measured or addressed culture and values with these walking codes. I've done that in this study. Now, if you compare the culture and value set of rugby and to that of cricket, for argument's sake, and remember, culture determines the way you do things. and your attitude towards things. There's a clear correlation. As long as the demographics of the decision-making structures of rugby is not changed, the decisions that they take and what they support and what they don't support will be dominated by the culture prevailing within that decision-making structure at the moment. So next year, there will be a measurement put into the charter where we will determine and measure culture and values within a sporting organization and then devise ways of changing it to further and help change what it is. Then the next one, like what I said with no joint programs and projects between government structures and the next one, school sport is in, I'm going to over-exaggerate, is in total disarray. The development and the changes that have taken place is not promoted to be able to establish a sustainable school system. Why? Teachers are not involved anymore to organize sport at school level. Sporting coach has never been involved to organize sport in the school context. It's always been school teachers. Now, in the new education strategy, school teachers bluntly say the sport is not my job to organize school. Now, dear lady, if we are going to sit around and not create participation opportunities, there are no underage leagues, there are no underage competitions at the school level in anyone or most of the codes. So if a child will not, the answer does not lie in appointing a physical education teacher. A phys ed teacher has got a subject to teach in his school. A phys ed teacher is not the organizer of school sport. And school sport in an individual school cannot be organized by one teacher. It's several teachers. A sports body cannot enter a school and now want to go on this terrain to go to organize and leagues and underage teach. Now, the sequence that adds to the fact that there are no facilities. So the sequence of no facilities, no underage participation opportunities, no leagues, means bluntly no accessibility. So what we have is that the school sport is tied at the school level. The coach can't solve that problem because it's not their domain. They can't go along with a principal or the parent body, what they must do and carry on. So it is a serious matter. And the longer the vicinity problem is left unresolved, we are the architects of the demise of our sports structure, without a doubt. Because the sporting codes or the federations, they can't solve that problem. They're doing a pretty good job to compete internationally, and they've got academies, and they've got high-performance athletes, all in it. They're doing a pretty good job, but at the bottom, the system is totally collapsing. If that facility problem and that structure is not resolved at a school level, we cannot transform or change our thing. Now, the other problem in sport coming out of the study was the decline of club structures. Now, clubs don't offer an age competition anymore. So if you don't get into the first team or the second team, you come out of school, you've got nowhere to go. So you come from an environment where you don't have the opportunity to participate under age. You get out now, you see the club structures, and say, I'm wasting my time. And in the light of all the other entertainment and recreation activities available, clubs are also dying in the process. So if you look at the development triangle that we are looking at the top, reasonably okay, we can compete. But at the bottom end, which affects our long-term sustainability and competitiveness, the system is collapsing. Dear lady, the other one that came up is that for girls, rugby and football and cricket, for example, there are no opportunities almost whatsoever at a school level. There's nothing taking place. So what rugby and cricket and football are doing is they plug them out of the provincial structures, the ladies, and then they put a national team together, and there's no basis or a foundation which it can be built. As I've already said in the initial slide that I've had, overall governance performance in key selected areas are below par. Confirmed, as I said, in those recent things, and in cricket, etc. And indeed, as we can result in re-looking at governance in a sporting context internationally, is how capable are those federations or those coaches with respect to preparing themselves for the future, to develop plans to address the school problem and to overcome it, and to make sure that they're competitive in the long term. Again, just to re-emphasize, the longer we dabble on that sport facility provision plan, the better our problems are going to become, because we cannot promote accessibility and more participation opportunities, and then you find that there's no facilities. Where are the guys going to play? The frustration among school kids where the sport is reaching them and they can't play because there are no facilities Then, the last couple of things, there's insufficient focus on sport on preferential procurement, because we've got to push that one. Because if we can convince the Minister of Finance by quantifying exactly the amount of money that is put into the economy of sport, you can imagine how much is coming from rugby and cricket and football, for argument's sake, with respect to using outside service providers and so on. And so if we can convince that it's formally in that, then we can say, hey, we need to have a percentage of that to come back to us to fund this transformation charter plan, which is taking on good shape. I've mentioned the suboptimal alignment and coordination and synchronization between different sport federation and government sport levels and sport system. And I just want to re-emphasize, as long as that continues, and we all do our own little program and projects, we are not going to solve the problems. Recommendations that came out from the, those were some of the observations that we need to put in according to the EPG. Special measures are required to ensure greater accessibility and better quality data input. If the data that we get from the federations are poor or not reliable, our conclusions is going to be also poor. The amount of work involved, because we go right down into each one of the component provinces of each, necessitates the need for an automated database. We can't continue to do this stuff like by hand. That recommendation to increase 50 to 60, that is accepted and it's already implemented. And also now, Chair Lady, alongside generic Black African representation has been put into the charter in addition to generic Black. So we won't make the mistake again to neglect and not monitor how are we progressing with Black African representation opposite generic Black. The quality of the school and club databuses are pathetic. The codes do not know how many schools participate in the code. They do not know how many facilities are there in the school structures. So the level and the quality of data that are being accumulated and looked at, they just walked away over the last 20 years from that. Now that's like a business in one of the supermarket halls that don't know how many shoes it sells and to whom it's sitting in. And that contributes to the fact and demonstrates the level and the quality of the administration and management that's taking place there. One of the recommendations that was also of a high priority is that all the sports administrative and management structures are in the old South Africa. It's in the metropole and the municipality areas that we know. But there's hardly ever do you come across a new sports structure. There's no cricket sports structure or a rugby sports structure in Sosongui or in Eersterus. it all takes place in those areas by virtue of the fact that the mother body, in terms of the national revenue, sort of provides. You've got to get in communities of the future, I call them, to make sure that there are proper sports structures that will take care of administering those sports in huge areas, as we know. And it's also the areas where we fall short with respect to black African representation and all those things. We can no longer rely on the historical administrative sports structures in Pretoria, Johannesburg or Cape Town. We've got to duplicate the sports structures with a chairman or a president and a councillor and a board member in each one of those, and each one of those areas. The other recommendation was that the transformation change program that had been positioned in a more strategic area of the department. It's now in the service department, not a service, it's a strategic consideration, and it needs to feature very prominently. Because when you study the charter, you'll see that that charter is actually the framework for any sports organization to be able to plan and put together its strategic plan, because it addresses all the aspects that needs to be in there. The feasibility, the EPG also recommended that the DSRSA investigate the possibility of getting a private sector supported strategic transformation fund to be able to fund specific transformation initiatives. Also, the other recommendation was that there's got to be an engagement with the lottery and the sports trust through the DSRA department to ensure funding of projects linked to improved initiatives of transformation that reach. The lottery and the sports trust just fund. Sporting codes come along and they ask ad hoc amounts of money, which is poorly managed, not properly implemented. There's got to be an agreement to make sure that those sources of finance are aligned to what is required in terms of the charter. We're currently in the process of an additional 11 codes, both team and individual oriented sport trust to form that vote to repeat the status review in 2004. There's only about 4 or 5 outstanding. All the ones that's been received has been accorded, and we have started the analysis thereof. It's also recommended that the department uses its transformation data sheet outcomes as an additional tool for prioritizing sorting codes. The historical transformation committees that have been established in the previous 20 years, many of them have disappeared. They have got to be revived to be able to oversee this process within each one of the codes. It is also recommended that there's an engagement by the minister to the Springbok team's democratic profile, which Ms. Chairlady, which you mentioned, has not made any sense with respect to our national democratic profile. They have been engaged, and they've already committed both rugby and cricket are now enforcing quotas of their own on their provincial unions. Now that will accelerate the process from the schools, enlarging the footprint for girls in schools at club level is a top priority if we want to make have an impact over there, and that is high focus, and all the girls are already committed to that, and they are busy putting in programs at school for girls at school level. So, dear lady, in conclusion, the first pilot study and the outcome thereof has been beyond expectation, beyond our wildest expectation, and it has justified the establishment of an independent EPG group, and the 2014 study that is in progress will cover a larger number of codes with respect to the transformation status, and we can rest assured that we are going to get far greater and more deeper insight into the cause, root causes of transformation, the influence, and what to do with that. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Member.
Honorable Chung, Honorable Purple, Honorable Kaula, Honorable Lambo. In that order, please. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Honorable Chair. I think it's quite a comprehensive presentation from the department, and glad to welcome it. It was initially, I had 3 questions that I wanted to ask the department. But in terms of the presentation, I was covered on the 2 questions. Because the issue of transformation, in terms of my understanding, is that it's not a by the way issue. The Constitution of the Republic also makes provision. Around, like for an example, section 9, subsection 10, it makes specific reference to the issue of transformation and inclusion of all other demographics, so that nobody can be discriminated, whether you are black, and whether you come from a particular ethnic group and so forth. And then President Mandela used to make also a specific reference to that particular constitutional imperative. In 1995, when the rugby the rugby squad won the rugby World Cup, it was in 1995. And then when the president went there to receive the trophy, it was also mentioned. So, and then the minister also of sports, it was on record that it would be during the debate of sports, that the issue of transformation can be reduced to a quota system, removing a black, removing a white, being replaced by a black person. It means we are not achieving the issue of transformation. And the minister also said it's not only happening here at our level, but we need to check how many people are in the rugby team and all of that. We need to change the mindset and the perception of how people think out there. And I think that's the major challenge that we're facing. In our presentation, we've also made reference to the issue of one of the challenges that makes it very difficult for you also to address the issue of transformation. Like for an example, my friend has been the different sporting group, the boys, the problem is that actually in charge of the different sporting groups. They are not pro this transformation agenda, and then some of them, they make their own applications. They don't go to the department and see the commission. They make their applications through the lottery, national lottery, and then they receive the funding from the lottery, which makes it very difficult for the department to enforce the issue of transformation. In your presentation, you've also mentioned the issue of you are going to monitor and evaluate, but there's our part which I'm more interested in. Just to see, are you just monitoring and giving a report, waiting to get a report from a different sporting group? How far are you in terms of the transformation? How far are you in terms of addressing the objectives of the transformation charter? I want to know yourself as a department, what is it that you are doing to enforce it on the different sporting groups or the different bodies that are responsible for those sporting groups? Are you just sitting there and waiting, you know, with the transformation charter, we are going to monitor and evaluate, but there's nothing in terms of enforcement that you are making these bodies to comply with transformation charter? I think that's the level of interest for now. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much,
Chairperson,
and thank you for the presentation. I think that was a very learning session for me. And yes, I think all of us are in favor of transformation in all sports in South Africa. I don't think that is anymore a problem in our different culture groups. We accept it. But I'm a bit worried if you said up to 2018 there must be a certain number of culture groups in a 14. The one what I have is now maybe we are going to look again to quotas to fulfill in this what we want to reach at the end of the day, our goals. But on the other hand, I can see the study is very good and you've done a lot of work. Our problem is really at schools. That is where the problem started. I was many years involved in school sports, so I know exactly what you're talking about when you said that is the problem. Many of our rural schools, out of Model C and private schools, haven't got sport facilities. And that is where the problem is. And we touch on it in another meeting where we have a discussion in education. You see that all new world schools have that facilities. They must have sport grounds,
Otherwise, it will happen exactly as you said, that it will just disappear, and we will, they will not be people from our deaf communities who get involved in sport. So that is a worrying factor, and I think both the Department of Education and Sport and Recreation must get together there, so that we can see that we're fulfilling this, that the new school has sport facilities and the older schools, that we must make a plan there. And then the other thing you mentioned is the teacher involvement in sport. I don't agree with that at all. What you said is the way to go. You can't get the teacher who's had a curriculum to work on during the day have sport in the afternoon. We must, I do not know how we are going to resolve this problem, because the management and everything is from the teacher side. They are motivating the children to get involved in certain sport codes, and if they are not doing it, who is going to do it? Who is going to bring the children to the sport field and say, listen, we are going to this sport or this sport in this specific school? So I'm worried about that. I think that is, if we can crack that one day, I believe we are on the right track, and then we will have involvement from all over the spectrum, and all communities will get involved in this different sport. You also mentioned about, in the beginning you were talking about fifth sport code, and later on you add 11, sorry, it is 16 in total. But then I want to know, what about the rest? So I know that is the big one, big sport code, but what about the rest? There's a lot of other sport codes who also need financial, people to afford them, and I'm worried about that sport code, because it is easy for that code to just disappear now. And I'm also worried when you talk about how are South Africa going to look in the face of the rest of the world? And therefore I said we must have transformation, but I'm a bit worried about the quota issue. And many times you make a decision and then that was a study. So let's continue with it. Let's have it in practice. And the main problem we have in South Africa is newspapers. There's always, if we try to change something in sport, it is in the newspaper, it is headlines, and they upset people from different cultures. And that is our problem. And then we move backwards again. I don't think we really lost 20 years down the road, down the line. Transformation takes time. And we have just 20 years. So we don't lost all that 20 years. Maybe some of them, but not all the 20 years. I totally agree with the targets without the involvement of politicians. And that is the other problem we have. And we are all sitting here and decide our politicians. So we like to get involved, but sometimes it is not the right way to do it. I agree. Let's leave it to the people who have the skills, who know how to do it, and I think we'll get our target at the end of the day. Financial, I think what you said there, I also agree with it. We must have financial support from government side if we want to reach the goals. And in our sports structures, need and always good management. Otherwise, there will be also that nothing happens. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson, and thanks to the APG for the presentation and the work that you have done so far. Really appreciate it. I want to join what you've been saying. Kind of good work that you have been involved in, and you are quite right, you know, from 1994, 20 years into our democracy, it's kind of a shame that we are still talking about the things that we should have corrected then, and we are just starting. I am not going to have questions, Chairperson, but I'm just going to have inputs, because you know, this is a very interesting project we are talking about. The first thing that made me not lead much to, and the thing that said that I wanted clarity on, which maybe the only one question is, why are you called eminent person? I would like to get clarity into that, because there are so many things ringing, you know, even before you came here, country has been, the department has been talking about eminent persons doing this and that in terms of sport for South Africa. And I was wondering, I've always been wondering to myself, why were you called eminent persons group? But Chaplain, coming back to our subject, I agree with you in almost everything that you have said. I would like to make input into areas that maybe can make a difference if you also focus into them. You see, sports development is a problem that makes us not achieve the target that you are talking about. It starts with development, like you have said, because, you know, transforming the nature of sports, the faith of sports in our country, has to be accompanied by quality competitiveness. Now, if we don't have quality sports development programs, we are going to achieve transformation, but we are not going to be competitive. Now, in order to do that, there needs to be very good sports development programs in the country. The problem that I see is that in our country at the moment, federations are voluntary organizations, people volunteers. Most of the time, people who are involved as office bearers in federations, they are volunteers. And when you look at it, who is going to volunteer? It is a person who has got the means to be able to do things. Who are those persons? It is those people who have been involved before. The people that you are talking about, the 84%, their parents are not going to volunteer because they don't have means. I'm not going to be able to get there. And that is where we suffer. That is where we suffer. There must be ways of capacitating people so that in the federation sense, there is transformation. So that in the federation sense, people who are involved are people who will have this thing at heart, that will go out there and look for the 80% to be part of our programs. Secondly, you spoke about the disarray of sport programs in our schools. They are quite right. But the difference is, the teacher of yesterday was a volunteer also in sport programs, even after hours. The teacher of today is not going to volunteer. You ask him to put more in touch after hours, where is the money? I want to pay him. That's the difference. The teacher per se was a volunteer throughout. In fact, there was this saying that a teacher is a teacher for 24 hours a day, which is not anymore today. So maybe look into that, because you are not going to change the teachers we have today. You are not going to have to talk to them today about that, and we have a new teacher tomorrow. It's not going to happen. So we need to look into how does this thing happen. I went to research what happened to a study trip that was undertaken by a province of KwaZulu-Natal 2 years ago to Jamaica. Jamaica is a very small country, 2 million people as minus, South Africa 54 million people. But in terms of sport development programs, Jamaica is surpassing us. Why? Like you are saying, their sports programs development are linked to the schools. Their sports programs that are professional are linked into the universities. So the development is with the schools, the professional part of it is with universities. The talent is nurtured right from school days right up to the professional level when you go to universities. Number two, they've got a sports school which trains specifically coaches for all the coaches that they have. And these coaches are deployed into all the schools of Jamaica. So the program, while it is linked to the schools, there are things that government is doing to assist in nature this development program. And it doesn't end there. The professional part is even natured into universities so that it is rightly monitored from beginning to end by the government of that country. It's something that we can do. It doesn't take a lot of resources. It takes planning, it takes passion, it takes love. That is what it needs. But right now, we do not have that kind of a pet in our community. We do not have that kind of a teacher in our school. If we can sort out those, then things maybe can start going somewhere. That's what I want to say. Chapter 10, I'm very passionate about sport. I'm a sports person in the past. I've been involved, and you can see where things are going wrong. You can see that we have a minister who does want to see things to go right, but it's not happening. It's not happening because there are these little things that need to be sorted out. We have people in federation today who are opportunists. You get there for money. It's not going to happen. You don't get into sport because you want money. You don't get involved in federation because you want a name for yourself. No, it has to be people who have got time for sport. One thing, you want to get into these federations, they talk about positions. They care about positions. It's been happening for the past whatever years in our athletics in the country. There have been problems year in, year out in athletics because people are positional. It's not about developing sport, it's not about developing the country. Those are things that need to be sorted out. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Joy.
Thank you for have a better nation in terms of sport, because what brings discipline, it brings a healthy mind, and yet our government, according to your presentation, is not putting the money where it mouth is. That's the first thing. We cannot expect better production than best production when the government is not putting money where it mouth. That's the first thing. I had an opportunity of being a teacher for 20 years and predominantly in modern schools. Now one of the initiators who had said, let's join the Model B schools, the so-called black schools, with the Model C so that we could nourish and nurture each other. And one thing that was very distressing is to see that the supporting facilities in the Model C schools versus the black schools are not there. So we're not going to get the sporting course right. I'm talking about swimming. There are swimming facilities in black schools. And in white, the girls' high school has been for years. Tesla girls who have been for years. Middlebury girls' high school have been for years. As an itinerary teacher, when I started in 1991, then. You get these facilities. Cricket. There's an adjective to do cricket. The parents are involved. In black schools, the parents are known there because they are at work. They can't sleep off work because if they're not at work, the money will be deducted in. It has social ills in it. I'm talking badminton that exists in modern schools, which will never. You go to a black school, they don't even know what is badminton. And I'm talking hockey, cricket, and I'm talking boxing, which is predominantly known to be the Eastern Cape, East London, to be specific, sport, boxing. Correct. Those sporting codes, we need them because a child cannot only excel in netball and rugby and cricket. And rugby, as Machia Tasson said earlier on, is seen, there's a political notion, is seen as an African sport. And yet, if as a teacher you search for a talent and you find one child who's very good at rugby, I've got a brother who got an injury and was on a wheelchair until his death. The injury set on his wheelchair, honestly, fact, he loved rugby. He loved even when he was on his wheelchair with a C5 injury as a quadriplegic. So I'm trying to say, you do get in townships and Google to Nanga and Nyang, who don't want to play rugby, but teachers are not interested. I want to go back to the presenter's thing, and having been a teacher myself, at a stage I was put to look at Natalie DuJoin. At what a girl's high. Swimming. I knew nothing about swimming, but I shook. I knew nothing about it, and I was not interested in being so good. I was because I knew nothing about it. Instead, Natalie Detroit came out of the water and taught me that now I'm doing this wrong. Now I'm peddling, I'm doing this and this. She taught me, but I was there because I had to fulfill the 80 hours that she expected of me as an educator. And yes, Jefferson, I knew as well that my IQS, which is my appraiser, is not going to be asking me about the 7 days. So I was not interested. I was interested in getting my metrics, if they could pass, and making sure that my class is 100% and is above 90%. So I know exactly. Teachers are very demoralized, and the thing the government is making us work hard. Yes, the money is staying in one place, we're not getting any incentives. You are just there to fulfill the time. Honorable criminal colleague of mine, we expect it to happen. It's poor. It's not happening. There is so much dissatisfaction, demoralized teachers out there. You go and speak to them. They are not interested. Instead, they politicize and criticize indefinitely. And I'm talking about being a teacher. I'm talking from experience. It's not going to happen. Because the government is not funding. Your presentation said the government is not funding this. I don't see any correlation between health. This is sport has something to do with health. Department of Basic Education and tertiary, because if the child passes matric, if the child goes to tertiary, there should be an oversight to see that the child doing it at tertiary level. It ends there. It ends there, and I'm talking to people who are good. Our children, the so-called black children, are very talented. Once you find the talent and nourish and nurture it, it ends, unfortunately, at grade health. And tertiary is nowhere to find. Then it's like it slips out of the child. And it's so sad and depressing because the child could be whatever. The other thing, this is the presentation about who's the girl who runs. Cut the flame. It's so disappointing. And this goes according. This is about discipline. She's got an opportunity. She doesn't utilize it to the best of her ability. She got everything at her disposal. The presentation even said she's getting everything, accommodation, paid and whatever, but she's not doing it because the parents are minimal in supporting. And in the so white school, you see parents on Saturday morning in textiles. In after doing and doing even fundraising and being there and supporting the child. It's not happening with us and it comes with our social ills. So I'm not blaming a black parent who goes on Saturday morning to earn more money in order to pay the fees. I'm not blaming them. This comes with social economic ills. Coming to the coordination, the coordination and the piloting that happens. You've done so many things. I see in your slide you've got some recommendations ensuring appropriate school and class database applicable. This could all work, but it needs more of the government support. We are going to politicize it and put our political recommendations, but on the ground, as Honorable Stock said, it is not happening. It is not happening. So there should also be an education link where we change the mindset of the parents. But then, the ones tell them, I must go to work because I need to pay rent. I must go to work because I need to put food on the table. So after 20 years, we're not seeing what we expected to see because we're still dealing with the imbalances of the past. The imbalances of the past are not going to vanish in 20 years. No. It's going to take time. But we keep it in our fire. That's what the Africans say. We keep it in our fire. We've got to drive. We've got to go with the drive and still force it to get there. By the time maybe we know more, then we start seeing the fruits of what we've studied previously. It's the third thing. I love sport. And I always say, had I been not the product of Ghana education, I would be a swimmer because I love swimming. I can't even paddle. I can just play in the water. I love sport, but it goes back to where we're coming from. And that cannot end within a wink of an eye. Collaborative efforts in terms of the government, preventing putting departments help which want to do awareness campaign. Departments of Health have to do an awareness campaign in terms of this presentation to conscientize, especially the black communities, that doing sport is going to do good for your body, and starting with the parents. So, also, our parents, from the stuff we eat all the time, which is also determined by your wages or your salary, is also a factor, but our companies need to be held. Information sessions for parents at school need to be held. So it's not only Department of Health, it's a collaborative effort of Department of Health, Department of Basic Education, Department of Recreation and so on, Department of Higher Education coming together, starting from information session, awareness campaign, and mobilizing children to come to the forefront. Black children love sport. And it's a way of taking them from drugs, substance abuse, or whatever. So it could go through the nation a better world at some stage, but we've got to find another person, a very good way of taking the problem. Because we've got such a beautiful country, beautiful communities and nation, and it's said that they add up in a way because of this. It's quite sad. At some stage when, after 1994, there had been from President Mandela a proposal that black schools must come and visit white schools and white schools go to black schools in terms of the subject matter she was the content. But it was never done in sporting facilities. That if we could get the black schools to come and use the facilities in white schools, have one school in Kukule too, I'm just making an example, I'm not aligning the other provinces. I'm just using the one that I know. From Pilichem to one school, we align it with special girls in Claremont. Then those children can use facility, chairperson, of tennis courts, of swimming, and promote other courts, because it's going to take time for the government to build those facilities. In that way, it will nourish our children going there and using the facilities, and it will make them and probably give a vision of where they're coming from. Because you never get an athletic toy going to Kailisha, but if you go from Kailisha, take the chance to use a facility in terms of tennis, use the tennis court, the swimming, indoor swimming, not the outdoor one only, indoor swimming, synchronized swimming, every sporting coach to be there and not only be effective for the so-called white child. Black people can do it. As they do with the arts. The artwork, they do it from Kailisha, they go to Newlands and go to Weatherford High, and they do, and the black children are very gifted when it comes to drawing and those. So we can also do it with the sporting. Get the black schools come over this side, and they go and you know, that's a way of reconciling even with your imbalances of the past. I think it's a chicken. I'm sorry, I'm a passion for this, so I'll do stop.
Thank you very much. No, I am not a sports person. My name is Stella, and now I'm using however, I do appreciate the performance, and my children are all sports people. My son is into rugby. He is one of those children that got frustrated in terms of not getting opportunity, and no, I would like also to take this opportunity to welcome the presentation. And I want to believe that when the ministry decided to put this group of eminent people together to actually get involved in this kind of work, it's because they wanted to take the country forward in so far as sports is concerned. And your presentation has enlightened us on a number of issues that as this committee we may not have been necessarily aware or really given off. Your second point, your presentation, captured my attention when you spoke of the government. the administration of structures, the integration of the structures that are responsible for running sports in South Africa, the integration of resources, and moving in a specific direction, all of us with a view to achieving this social cohesion, coordination, and the development that we will aspire to see. When we mention of the issue of developmental skills and all those other related capabilities, additional potential, those are all the issues that we can be able to delve deeper in for as long as the administration is coherent. The challenge of resources and the facilities that we need to develop, not only in the urban areas but also in the rural areas, particularly in schools. I'm a bit heartbroken because a number of our schools, those that were previously disadvantaged, sit in areas that were not properly planned for education. The other building of the structure did not accommodate the sports facilities. Now the principals are sitting with a situation where there is not a patch of land where they can take the learners to actually get developed in so far as sporting content. The issue that my colleagues are raising of this child. I went to a school where there was no expert in sports. There was no student who was a coach in level or rugby or whatever. But teachers had to undergo training, intense training, in order to be able to take us to athletics and all the other foods, soccer, netball, those foods that were common during our day. But the situation has changed. And the government has put it very blessing. We are not going to be able to change teachers of the day to do what our teachers do. It's a totally different scenario. Which means now there has to be a collaborative effort between the Department of Education and the Department of Sport and Recreation in ensuring that at least we do have a proper trained personnel getting into the schools and assisting learners to unleash talent and develop them in the various schools. But the constraint is that in 70 schools, 70% schools, they are no facilities. Even if government has the money to develop the sports facilities, they are no patches of ground. Now, a plan has to be developed maybe to go out of the school ground and develop facilities such as schools that are adjacent can actually come together and share the facilities and we have experts then going there for assist. So this working relationship between the Department of Education and Sports and Recreation is critical in actually attending to the problem of sports in schools. You also made mention of generic mentality. And you cited examples of kids that are being pursuing, rugby is not yet free. But in this generic link, why would we have to see the disaggregation if this aggregates the data in terms of us seeing in the generic black target how many they are black applicants? Because if it is generic black, we don't understand, all right, they are Indians, they are Hanas, but how many black are they? In relation to the number that we have, the 84% that she is not about. That is where we aspire to go. As politicians, we always be tempted to give instruction and to say this should happen, that should happen. And some things you make mention of merit that need to take into account. But when we talk about merit in sport, a child in Model C, having been very well prepared with all the facilities and all the care and training will not be the same as a child from Inuma Bada High School, where there are no facilities, no specialties. When you get married, one of the groups will definitely be disadvantaged. And how do we do this? The other one is potential. but it has not been unleashed. The other one has potential, it has been unleashed, and when it comes to marriage, the other one is much better than the other. They can always be disadvantaged. So I think it's a problem as to within the context of sport, Mr. Francois, how do we get married?
Set up things about quota, then we may find ourselves able to say, okay, to focus on numbers. Okay, in the first team, there are 20 players, or whatever the number is, or the 10 players, or 5, whatever the number, the 11th number is. That's for the sake of applying, not really, they were choosing a player on merit. But when you look at merit again, they are approved best disability. Those are very difficult issues that you have to grapple with taking the nation forward. Because as members said, sport is of vital importance. It sharpens the thinking ability in school, the physical fitness, the potential of following it as a career and actually living on it. There are various advantages of sport, and we need to take it as seriously as any other subject in school, not just by the way, extracurricular is a thing that is just there, it doesn't touch us directly, it is not supposed to be like that. So on the basis of our comments, members of the group can then answer some of the questions or make your own comments. I think we did understand at least a portion of the presentation. Thank you.
The merit argument comes from that part of our society opposing change or transformation. It's very strong. A merit can never be a consideration until the playing fields have been leveled. Mm-hmm. From outside our interaction with the minister and with the DG and so on, the code of is to make very sure that the merit issue does not dominate the ultimate objective and how to go about it, because otherwise we'll make huge mistakes. The sports organizations will always argue, particularly the coaches, and some of the primary coaches are not, some of them border and come from a culture and a background which is totally opposed to being about change in terms of what we want, what we need. So the coach selects the team. The coach selects the team. So if the coach's attitude and value set is not in line, we've got very big problems. And that's why culture and value measurement will be introduced next year to be able to determine how well equipped is someone in the structures within the coach or a selector to pursue our objectives, keeping in mind that we still want to win. We don't want to lose, because you can't play sport without aspiring by it. But you've got to be very careful in terms of how you balance creation and giving opportunity and merit on that one. So that's an important one to keep in mind. But merit is not the only issue. The other stuff is one. Then the other important point is you can see where the problem lies. The only constituency that can solve the alignment, coordination, and synchronization problem are the politicians. They are in power with respect to how the education department are. They are in power with the Department of Sport, whatever, or local government, provincial government. And as long as that boat is not coordinated, that 8 men rowing in that boat will drift further and further apart from the 8 people that are sitting in the sport boat, the national body, the provincial body, and the boat. So the boats, instead of competing equal or acting, is just drifting apart. So the need for coordination and an orchestrator is absolutely vital. Otherwise, we'll keep on building this Tower of Babel, and then we're going to get, we see, well, no, it's not working. It's not going. So I wanted to make that point. The other point is with the quotas. A quota, and it comes from the old language, when 20 years ago, when we tried to force sporting codes to change. So we said quota, because that means you will do it on that basis. We've come a long way now. Through this process, we don't call quotas anymore. If a quota comes up, it will be one that's imposed by the sports body itself, like cricket and rugby is now done on the ground. They have said to their provincial structures, you will have a quota of at least 3 black applicants in each one of the provincial teams. And that way it will filter up. But it's no longer a politically motivated thing. It's the sports body itself. They have accepted the fact that they have this change to survive the main competitor. So we say our target is to, over a period of time, achieve that. And now we monitor the trends. Because also keep in mind, rugby will never change at the same rate as what cricket and football change. Because we all agree the cultures are different. So we've got to affect the culture of rugby. And we've got to take them along with us. And we've done that. They've committed. They've committed, and they're going to sign a memorandum of agreement to reach for this target out there. So we're not back 20 years around that. The other thing, we all know the symptoms of COVID. I've had the fortune, misfortune to be involved in sport for 30 years. Executive member of NEC, first organized a group together with Mr. Stamien to go to Barcelona. We made our own flag, we made our own anthem when we went there. So, but the same arguments come up. We identify the same problems, teachers, schools, etc. And we know the symptoms, but we're very short of solutions to the problem. For 30 years, we don't come up with the solutions. We need a coordinated effort to address these problems and then make sure that we come up with a solution to the problem. Model C's, we spoke of Model C's by the schools. We are, because we're not coordinated, we're allowing the elitism that's taking place at private schools and Model C schools. They're on a boat trip of their own. And everybody else, 80% of the school population is excluded from that luxury boat trip that they're on. They do just what they want to do. They arrange their own matters amongst each other and what they are. Now, again, if there's not an orchestrator or a coordinator to solve this thing and hit it on the head, it's going to continue. The other thing is, in the rugby and cricket, we are number one, number two in the world. Because why? The reason was the system that was built up teachers. Rugby and cricket has got momentum because of the school structures that were put into place by teachers, not by anybody else. And all they've done is they've taken those guys that come out there, and now they put the funds you need to it. And high performance academies at Victoria University, they've got all of that. So they're working with the fruits of the efforts of people of the past. But because it's running out, they're not going to remain competitive for much longer. I believe 15 years, then we will not compete internationally in rugby and in cricket. I've dealt with the quotas, and I predict that if we do not solve our problem at the school level, to create opportunities for kids to participate at each underage level, we will run out of human capital. And although the systems at top level are good in terms of what you've got, they're not going to have sufficient skill to find you to remain competitive. So the question of coordination and putting together and let orchestra play, let rugby play, education department, and all play, and we make beautiful music. If that's not taking place, we are wasting our time, and we will. Respect, I disagree. We have wasted 20 years because we know these problems 10 years ago, but because we don't coordinate the value, we don't move forward. But I'm confident that with the EPG, which is an independent group, they're not attached to anybody, they can speak their mind, and they deal with the issue. That's you and I.
Thank you, Dr. Mahlangu. I just want to add to Chinese records. I'm always impressed and fascinated with the knowledge of politicians like in the field. And one should have politics in sports. But if one look at the current situation of our sports, it's unfortunate that the intervention of politicians is the only people who can say. The issue of culture. The Jefferson is some people might think this for granted. You would find white kids playing rugby, African Japanese kids playing rugby. You would find a coach is a white person. You would say what should happen and should be fashion. Now, the African black child was taught not to talk back to an adult person. Okay? He might not be able to do something or he doesn't understand something. Now he will keep back. While the white child is more explicit, he would ask right on the spot because he doesn't see him in the interrupting the coach. At the end of the day, the coach would find the black kids not to be cooperating or listening. And as a result of it, he might not become his reckoning in the team. Now, I was just trying to elaborate on some of the things of culture in sport. Now, we might take this for granted, but those who are actively involved in sport, you will know those kind of things. So we still have a very, very long way to go. The issue of the two departments, maybe the key departments, sports and education, and department of education. I don't know whether it's a fight for turf, but from the fact of the EPG, we feel that the Parliament's view of that. We can say 1,001 things. The bottom line is, from the findings that Dr. Dasson explained here, that is the way to go. However, in between, we can't wait for 20 years and do everything in the light. Let's continue to compete with. So, the Department of Education, basic education, and the Department of Sports and Education. I don't know, there's just some disalignment when it comes to our business. For example, a teacher would say, after school I can't, it's the part of my, I'm not getting paid. On the other hand, sports would want the teacher to be offered. What you do, you can't get the education, you can't. So that is disalignment there. And they don't need the resources. Without the resources and financial resources, they fail to get them. I think you were alluding to the fact that schools, private schools, rugby schools, whatever it is, they are still funded by the federation, whilst the ordinary black schools and the councils don't get any money. Now, so that can't even get in time. Because the department is giving money to the federation. The federation in turn will give funding only to certain schools, not to all the schools. And the picture gap is getting bigger. And the challenges we are losing is unbelievable. The talent is in fact you can cry if you realize the challenge we have. I think the issue of volunteers and sacrifice is also important. And sports is something that you love. You don't go into the money to be famous. as the minister always said, Chancellor Plow would not have been what he is today if he didn't start out there. If he was not supported by his parents, sacrificed, they were voluntary, but they also dig deep to their own pockets. And this is unfortunately what occurs. I think the first point I want to make is simple. The Department of Health, as you were saying earlier, sports bring better discipline in the healthy mind. So, the Department of Health, Department of Basic Education, Department of Higher Education, Department of Sport and Education, and COP. Because you would find the sports facility, but it's only with benefit. To access those sports facilities, you have to pay a certain amount to get on to be able to use those sports facilities. So there must be a coordinating the solution is what Dr. Hassan explained. But this will take time. That is just the process. But in the interim, what are we doing? So these are the departments that should come together. And unfortunately, or fortunately for that matter, the people in control or in charge of this, it's a balance.
My two approaches to the person. I'm quoting you here, doctor. You wait for your PhD. I must be conscious.
They got scared with that 84-6. They really, the opinions dropped. They really wait. They are prepared to train teachers extra for the afternoon continuity out of their own pockets. So they prepare to train teachers in individual schools just to start off by organizing rugby teams or cricket teams and then to organize with the schools in the media surroundings to play matches. However, you know, with life, the minute you come to an approach of people in second, teachers with better survey, they really weak. They say that's great. I'm gonna get paid extra. I'm wanting to get involved. Now the unions come in. Now the unions kick in and they say no, you can't do that because then you discriminate against the teachers that you do not want to participate. So you can see again the importance of a strong orchestrator. Because the EPG or any one of us, there's nothing we can do about it. But there must be a political figure in this whole equation that's strong enough to say, hey, I'm going to make this orchestra play based on all the things that we agree on to move forward. Because we're there now. We can solve the problem that our school board structure is not collapsing by the codes. We don't have to go and look for other rugby figures with lots of money to be able to pay that. I just want to make that point.
Thank you for the love of money. Not with the question for the job, would create major problems for us. But at least it could give us a starting point. Yeah, there are major problems, even not only with the private schools, but the public schools, where they are dominant racial groups that come from a good background. Because what happens is this, when the coach picks the team, you observe from what I'm being told that the people who get picked into the team are not necessarily good players, but they are children of those people that donate to the institution. So those that are good, but their parents are not coming anywhere in terms of donating in the institution, they get left behind. And that is evil. It's very evil. Those are all the issues that we need to deal with. I don't know how, I don't have the wisdom. But all that we pledge to do is you actually very emphatic in saying the politicians have got major role to be to turn around the sports fraternity in North Africa. And we need to exercise that mandate, that duty, by way of supporting the minister
as a leader of the department, ensure that they turn around in the continent in South Africa. So I want to take this opportunity to thank you very much for the presentation, Dr. Patel, and your team, and the contribution of the members. It was a very fruitful engagement based on our deliberations of taking the matter forward, the Department of Sports and Recreation of South Africa, and see what impact can be made out of this very, very valuable exercise of this report that you are with you.
Thank you for listening to us.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you. When we need you next time, I hope you won't have a problem with actually coming back soon to us as we have a win. But we really do appreciate the kind of perspective that you are listening to. Thank you. I think that a good choice for adoption of minutes. I think you acknowledge the good comments as well. We can then release the members of the group so they can be able to adopt the minutes. Oh, the Okay. We do want to hope that the member, the former member of the NA that made a valuable contribution. So I thank you very much for your contribution. You know the story of coordination department with a view to ensure that you reach our goal. We cannot make it right. Thank you very much.
I thought I was going to get the rationale behind the eminent.
I will ask the minister and I'll give you feedback. if I can attend Dr. Komoto, our shepherd. Apparently he has been not confronted, but he's been asked at a conference from where in the beginning it was. And he was saying, we need to look at the spending in the I also don't know why the music came up with this or the decision taken at the Indaba, but it's quite honest. I think if you look at the list, you see it's very visible, very busy people. So I thought maybe it was to make them feel important. But I'll tell you, I think we can do it.
You've got a little bit of numbers.
I don't know. 9 0 8 9 0.